Well, how are you guys doing today? Good, good. I like the reception on a cloudy day. It's okay. We're all here together. We're here to worship God. My name's Carter, and I'm the lead pastor. If we haven't met, I'm glad you're with us today. Before we jump into our text, I do want to celebrate one of our serve teams today that gets very little recognition usually. We don't mention them much, but I don't know if you guys know, this is a big facility, and we don't have enough money yet as a church to pay a cleaning team to come in here, okay? So what we do is we have some of our members as a cleaning team that come in every week or every month, every couple of weeks, and they clean the entire facility for us. And it's headed up by none other than my mother and father, who come in and give up their time to clean along with a few other people. So can we just celebrate and thank them for what they do to serve our church? It's part of good hospitality, you know? We want to make sure that our facilities are clean, and we really appreciate what they do for us in that way, unseen way. So I wanted to start that way today. But hey, we're going to be studying John chapter 2, verses 13 through 22, if you want to turn there or find it on your Bible app. And we're still right in the middle of a teaching series called Get a Hold of Yourself. And we've been talking about the feelings that we have and how to get a hold of those feelings so they don't get a hold of us. We've talked so far about shame, hurt, fear, loneliness, and sadness. Now, next week, we're going to talk about guilt, and we're going to end with gladness. So like I've said, you got to stick around for the good part. If you stick for all 8 weeks for that. Have you guys found this helpful so far? If you've been around, have you found this a helpful sermon series so far? You feel like it's shaking things up for how you feel? I hope so. I hope that you're getting a handle on what it looks like to have healthy feelings in a God-honoring way with them, because feelings aren't flaws, are they? We've been talking about this. They're not sinful in and of themselves. They show us the hungers of our heart, but we can't let them get a hold of us. If we don't get a hold of our feelings, they will get a hold of us, and the outcome is never a good thing. It's always problematic for us. We need to get a hold of them so they don't get a hold of us. Today, we're going to look at how to get a hold of our anger. Anger. Maybe you need this one today. Maybe you came in and you weren't prepared for it. I don't know. Just prepare yourself, okay? We're going to talk about anger. Let me give you some encouragement if you are an angry person. If you're angry, it just means that you're passionate, okay? That you're a passionate, loving person. If you're an angry person, you're generally a loving person. I was watching some YouTube shorts over the last few months, and I saw one of Keanu Reeves at Drew Barrymore's talk show. I don't know if you've ever seen this. I think it's an old one. I don't know the context of the conversation or anything like that. I just saw the clip. But basically, she was talking about how she's a lover, not a fighter. And his response was, well, no. If you're a lover, you've got to be a fighter. And she was like, what do you mean? And he said, well, if you don't fight for what you love, then what kind of love do you really have? It was a mic drop. And he got up and he walked away, and everybody like, oh my gosh, you know, it's kind of one of those moments. But it's true. It's true. That's what, I mean, if you love something, then you're going to fight for that thing. And anger comes from that. This is what Chip Dodd in his book, The Voice of the Heart, says anger is. He says it's a feeling that tells us something we love has been hurt, violated, or lost. So anger reveals what we love. He writes in chapter 3 that anger comes from the passion of caring deeply. So it's not primarily destructive in nature like we normally think of. Actually, it's primarily protective over what we love. Isn't that encouraging? If it's healthy anger, in fact, he calls it one of the most life-giving emotions when it's rightly directed. So anger is certainly something that we all know intimately, I believe. I mean, I don't have to convince any of us that, you know, you've been angry before. Maybe you've let it control you before. The question isn't, do you get angry? The question is, what is your anger fighting for? What do you get angry about? Anger always fights for something, whether it's to protect or to destroy. So this is our main point for today. If you're taking notes and you like to write things down, healthy anger fights for restoration, not retaliation. It builds up. It doesn't tear down. It helps heal. It doesn't help harm or doesn't harm. So in the story in John chapter 2 today, we're going to see Jesus' anger do just this, where he restores, not retaliates. He's going to get angry, yes, at the temple. We're going to see him overturn the tables for the money changers and the vendors that are there. And you've probably at least heard about this story if you haven't read it yourself. But it's often used to justify our personal anger, isn't it? When we lose control, it's like, hey, see, Jesus got angry. He got a little violent. He overturned the tables. What's the problem if I fly off the handle every once in a while? But listen, we're going to learn how he's fighting for restoration, not retaliation. His isn't a selfish anger. It's actually a selfless anger. I mean, it's funny, we all do this, don't we? We usually get angry out of retaliation, if we're being honest. We want somebody to pay for what they've done, whether it's to us or to somebody that we love. I mean, the guy who cuts you off in traffic, the coworker who takes credit for your idea, the bully who hurts the person that you love, all these things seem to justify flying off the handle, don't they? We excuse our anger, we pass it off as righteous indignation, you know? But in reality, it's totally selfish. It's all about us and how it affects us. I mean, while it can be the case that you can have righteous indignation, we'll talk about that today. If we're all being honest, our anger is probably mostly sinful. If we're just honest about it, it's mostly selfish. When we come into this, we need to recognize something about ourselves, because we have to ask, in those moments that we get angry, are we fighting for restoration, or is it really retaliation? That'll show us. That'll reveal it really quickly. Jesus wasn't throwing a temper tantrum here. It wasn't about retaliation. He was filled with passion and zeal for God's mission to the nations. He loved the people so deeply that he was angered by what he saw here. His wasn't a selfish anger, but a rightly oriented and godly anger. So let's turn to the next. Let's turn to the text here. We'll start in chapter 2, verse 13. Just so we understand, though, where we are before we read this, I've been jumping around John's gospel, and that's, you know, okay. I want you guys to read along with us so that you have the whole context for yourself. But here, we're at the very beginning, and it's hard to say, but most commentators have a debate on this, okay? Is this episode that we're about to read, does it actually chronologically begin at the start of Jesus' ministry? Or is it something that John added in theologically? So is it chronological or is it theologically placed here? That's the idea. That's the question. Because in all the other Gospels, the other three, what we call the synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, synoptic just means similar. So in those three Gospels, this episode of him turning over the tables actually happens at the end of his ministry, the week before he goes to the cross. Now, it's feasible that it happened both times. Maybe he did it at the beginning here, what John is saying, and then maybe he did it at the end. But I think John probably has something theological, not chronological, in mind when he puts this here. And he's trying to show us something, because if you recall, if you go back and read in chapter 2 and chapter 1, the thing that happens before this is the miracle at Cana, where Jesus turns the water into wine. We've probably all heard of that miracle as well, you know, because we all like that one, don't we? Because it's Jesus, he's the party guy, right? So that happens, and then this happens right after that in John chapter 2. And you're like, okay, what's John trying to get at? I think he's trying to get at something theological for us to learn about the very nature and character of Jesus. And I say that just so that you get that in your mind as we read this text together. I'm going to start in verse 13, and I'm going to read the whole story, and then we'll talk about it. This is the story. Here we go. It was nearly time for the Jewish Passover celebration, so Jesus went to Jerusalem. In the temple area, he saw merchants selling cattle, sheep, and doves for sacrifices. And he also saw dealers at tables exchanging foreign money, and Jesus made a whip from some ropes and chased them all out of the temple. He drove out the sheep and the cattle, scattered the money changers' coins over the floor, and turned over the tables. And then going over to the people who sold doves, he told them, "Get these things out of here. Stop turning my Father's house into a marketplace." And then his disciples remembered this prophecy from the scriptures, "Passion for God's house will consume me." That's from Psalm 69:9. But the Jewish leaders demanded, "What are you doing? If God gave you authority to do this, show us a miraculous sign to prove it." "All right," Jesus replied, "destroy this temple, and in 3 days, I will raise it up." "What?" they exclaimed. "It's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you can rebuild it in 3 days?" But when Jesus said this temple, he meant his own body. And after he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered he had said this, and they believed both the scriptures and what Jesus had said. All right, that's the story. So let's set the scene here. Jesus went into the temple, and he saw all these people selling sacrifices, and he got angry. Now, if you don't know the Jewish religious system and how it worked at the time, I mean, this kind of made sense that people were selling sacrifices here. Because, you know, if you wanted to go worship God, and this was for the Passover, so they were celebrating the big deal where Israel was delivered out of Egypt, you know, in slavery to Egypt. So they're celebrating that. You go to Jerusalem, you'd offer sacrifices. It was a big celebration and a big deal. So for them to be selling sacrifices makes sense, because people were traveling from all over the region to Jerusalem. It almost be impossible for them to bring a sacrifice themselves. So they need to buy a sacrifice there. And you know what? Sacrifices need to cost you something. They shouldn't be free, so you need to buy it. You need to give something in order to have a sacrifice that you can then offer to God. It has to cost you things, so this kind of made sense. Does this mean that Jesus is angry at them just for selling sacrifices and the system that they have here? Well, no, I don't think that's what's going on. Most of the commentators that we look at would say no. He's not angry that they're selling sacrifices. It should cost you something. It shouldn't be free. There are two main problems with this that Jesus is probably getting angry at. Number one is where it's taking place. And number two, potentially how much the salesmen and the priests themselves are profiting off of this endeavor. See, the other gospels tell us that they were set up in the court of the Gentiles. Now, if you don't know how the temple worked, it was in concentric courts. Starts off in the center where the Holy of Holies was. God's presence was supposed to literally dwell there on top of the Ark of the Covenant, and it was only accessible to the high priest once a year when he would go in and offer a special sacrifice, God's presence. But then it was surrounded by courts for the Jews to go and pray and to worship and do their sacrifices. And then the outside court, which is where this was taking place, was the court of the Gentiles. And that's where anybody from any nation, Jewish, non-Jewish, doesn't matter, anybody could go and worship God and specifically pray to God there in that court, and they'd taken up that space. So by taking up the space that was reserved for worshiping God for the nations, Jesus' anger was kindled because they were pushing out the Gentiles. They were pushing out the non-Jews in a racially biased way. Racism, imagine that, you know, happening here. And Jesus was angry that the Gentiles couldn't get in and worship. But he also called the money changers robbers in the other gospels. So they're robbers because it indicates they were charging too much for the sacrifices. It wasn't the fact that it cost people something. It was they were making a profit in an unethical way. And by that as well, the priests were probably profiting off of this. They were charging the money changers to be there, and they were making a profit. So it was all very unethically done. They had turned people into profit. Jesus was angry about it. So the point that I want us to see to sum it all up is this. Anger is appropriate when people are devalued. That's what's happening here. They don't really care about the people. They care about the money. They care about what's going on for them. So for us, anger is very appropriate when we see innocent people murdered or their murder being mocked. We've seen that happen in the last month, haven't we? And we've seen it happen a lot in our culture. It's very appropriate to be angry when we see that happening. It's appropriate when injustice is done to other, racism, sexism, all of that. It's appropriate when we see hypocrisy from our political leaders. It's very appropriate to be angry at that. It's devaluing others. It's okay to be angry when we see people profit off of exploiting others, like in pornography or human trafficking or drug trafficking. It's appropriate to be angry when we see abortion being defended in our culture or even championed in our culture, especially by people who even call themselves Christians. That's appropriate to be angry about that. It's okay to be angry when we see church leaders use their influence to take advantage of their flock, abuse their power, try to get rich. Like I've told you, I've never understood that. If you want to get rich, being in ministry is not the way. But anyway, you know, I mean, it's appropriate to be angry when we see people devalued. It's appropriate. When wrongs are done, people made in God's image are devalued. Anger is an appropriate response. See, healthy anger flows from love. Jesus didn't lash out here in a selfish way. He was standing up for what was right, especially given who he is. He sees people defiling the temple where the nations should be able to worship God. They weren't given the opportunity to meet with their creator. He's angry about it. He sees people profiting off of people in an unethical way. He's angry about it. Dodd calls this anger expressing the energy of caring deeply. You're expressing that energy through anger. Healthy anger is love protecting what matters most to you. It's appropriate when people are devalued in any way. It's appropriate to protect them, to uphold their value, to defend them, especially when they can't defend themselves. That's very appropriate. The problem comes when our anger is either misdirected or it's misapplied. Yeah, that's the problem. Here, this is the problem. You can write this down. We justify our anger before we ever let God justify it. That's the problem. We begin to justify ourselves in our own anger. We justify that, hey, it's okay to lash out. It's okay to do this or that because I'm angry. And our anger starts from self-protection and self-preservation before it ever moves toward God's purposes in our life. Most of the time, if it's not passion for the truth, it's just pain from a wounded ego or a loss of control, or it's pride in moments. Things get messed up in our life and we don't like it. We don't like it. I mean, like when you blow up at your kids because they interrupt your peace and quiet. There ain't no injustice in that, okay? Really, you're just angry that your time is being consumed. You don't have control over your own comfort. They've inconvenienced you. Okay, that's selfish anger. Or like when you stew in traffic or you go to the airport and your schedule gets hijacked because, not because of anything unjust, but just because it happened and you get angry. That's unjust for you. Or when a coworker criticizes you in a meeting and you immediately feel the need to prove them wrong and tear them down as a result, it's not zeal for the truth. That's self-preservation. Or when a spouse points out a blind spot, they might even do it in the wrong kind of way. It doesn't matter, right? Point out something that you need to hear, and instead of humility, you get defensive. You get angry. Not because they're wrong, because you can't stand being corrected. It's pride. Or you get angry when plans fall apart, not because God's glory is being diminished, but because your plans aren't happening the way you wanted them to on your timetable. Or maybe you seethe inside when somebody doesn't vote the way that you would. Or they don't worship the way that you would. And instead of honoring God and having unity in the gospel, you dishonor God by tearing people down because they're not following the way of the world that you would follow. They're not doing what you would do. Or maybe you get outraged about what's happening online. Maybe even in God's name. You're tired of seeing the culture rail against God. But listen, it plays out in passive-aggressive posts. Moral superiority, this air of moral superiority you have to put on from behind a screen. And you really reveal your hypocrisy. Listen, I hope one of those hits you. Maybe there's more. Maybe there's another way you can apply it to your own life. But here's the point along with that. Anger misdirected always destroys. It doesn't build up and heal. It always destroys when it's misdirected. It's unhealthy anger, tears down. And there's two ways that we can misdirect our anger toward others and toward God. So the first one is toward others. When we think about being angry toward others, Paul reminds us in Ephesians 6:12 that our enemy isn't flesh and blood, right? It's not people, spiritual powers. There's evil underneath of that. That's the real enemy. The real battle isn't against your boss. It's not against your spouse or a political opponent or a person who's even hurt you or hurt somebody that you've loved. The real battle is spiritual. The real enemy is spiritual. So when you get angry at other people, you end up negating what you're actually angry about with your own actions and your own words. That's what self-justifying anger does. It doesn't restore, it retaliates. It ends in destruction. You can't call yourself pro-life and then take a life in anger, for example. I've seen pro-life activists bomb abortion clinics or snipe abortion doctors before. Hello? Doesn't make any sense. You've just negated the very thing you were angry at with your own sinful anger. I'll give you another one. You can't fight injustice in a peaceful way and then burn down your neighbor's stores and rip apart your city. And peaceful protests can't turn into riots, and we think that that's okay. You can't preach grace and curse the very people that God came to save, like Christians tend to do with LGBT people. You know, we might disagree with their lifestyle or whatever. The moment that your anger turns into this thing where you're railing against somebody else, you've just negated the very thing that you were angry at. I mean, misdirected anger never restores. It retaliates, doesn't heal, it harms. And that's true when we're angry at God as well. So toward others is misdirected, but now that toward God is misdirected. That's what the Jewish leaders do here in this story we see, right? They get angry at Jesus. You're like, what gives you the right to do this? Where do you get your authority, man? Huh? You can't control our lives. What are you doing? This is our temple. You come in here and mess things up. They don't recognize God's authority for them. They didn't recognize Jesus' authority. They're like, show us a sign. Their anger is contrasted with Jesus' anger, isn't it? Jesus is angry at something. They're angry at something. Their anger is misdirected and selfish. Jesus wasn't based on what was self-serving for him. It was based on what was right. Their anger was based on what was right for them. See, we do the same thing, don't we? I know I've said this before, but I really believe it's what somebody needs to hear today. Listen, getting angry at God and pushing him away, it's not the answer for you. It's not going to make anything better. When you get angry at God, your pain and your suffering and injustice is still there. The evil is still present. So when you see pain or suffering or injustice or a loved one that gets hurt, the brokenness in the world that we see in some acute way, in some other way, being angry with God isn't the answer. Because it's like being angry with the air that we breathe and then trying to go underwater and live. You're going to drown. It's only going to serve to hurt you. Our selfish, self-justifying anger pushes us away from the only solution to evil and suffering that we have in the world. Pushes away from God, the very one who can give us hope, the very one who can heal and restore. And see, that anger eventually leads to destruction, because when we reject the God who gives us life, the natural and logical result is death. I say that a lot here, but it's true. If the one who created us and gives us life is the one that you reject, then the end for you is death. You know, we have to be careful, though, because in all of this, we don't want to lose sight that there is sometimes that it's appropriate to be angry. We talked about that in the intro. Anger isn't always wrong, right? There's a kind of anger that points upward and that is for the righteousness, and when God's dishonored, you get angry about it. You can write this down. Listen, anger is appropriate when God is dishonored. So I do want to make sure that we clarify that and say that. It's very appropriate. It's very appropriate when God is dishonored. When people are devalued and when God is devalued, if we put it that way, it's appropriate to be angry. When you see Christians acting hypocritically, or you see the culture mocking Jesus, or some musical artist mocking Jesus, or whatever it is, it's okay to get angry at that. It's appropriate. We need to fight for what's holy rather than feeding our pride or control in that. But let me ask you the hard question that comes along with this point. Do you ever get angry at your own sin and how you mock Jesus sometimes? This is where it gets real, right? Yeah, we get angry about the culture, don't we? But do you ever get angry at your own sin? Do you ever get angry at the things that you do that dishonor God? Because that's what sin does. It dishonors God. And we all fall victim to sin. We lose control of our anger. We let it control us. All of these feelings we've been talking about, we take them to an unhealthy place. We do things that dishonor God, and that's sin, because God's no longer in authority of our lives. We are. Our feelings are. The culture is. The circumstances are. Everything is in control except for God, the rightful one who has the control, the right to be in control. And it's not that we should bottle up our anger, act like nothing's wrong when things go bad. And it's not that like we have to get in this zen-like state where we never get angry and we just are like the dude and we just abide, man. So everything's copacetic, you know? That would be disingenuous. It's just that when we get angry, we shouldn't sin in our anger. That's what Ephesians 4:26 tells us. You remember Paul writing this in Ephesians. This is the NLT. It says, and don't sin by letting anger control you. Don't let the sun go down while you're still angry, for anger gives a foothold to the devil. Man, some translations will say, be angry and do not sin. That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Okay, so we've talked about, man, feelings aren't bad. Anger's not bad. So how in the world can I be angry and not sin? What do we do? What's the answer to that? Well, the answer is we need to understand what Jesus was saying to the Pharisees in this text, in our story. Because see, their anger was self-justifying. They rejected Jesus as their only hope and demanded a miraculous sign in response. And this is what he replied when they said that. We want a miraculous sign. He said, okay, listen, destroy this temple, and in 3 days, I'll raise it up. What's he talking? I mean, we learned from the text that he's talking about himself, right? They didn't know that, but he's talking about his own life. He is the temple. That would have been hard for them to grasp. Because the temple is the place where God dwelled with his people, and they would go to meet with God. You would go to the temple in order to have mediation between you and God through the sacrifices, through the high priest and all of that, so that you could have a relationship with God. And he's saying here, he is the temple. He is the place where God dwells with his people. If you wanted to deal with sin in the Old Testament, you would go to the temple. Now he's saying, if you want to deal with your sin, you got to come to me. I am the temple. That's radical, man. No wonder they wanted to kill him. They couldn't fathom what he was saying here. It's just, it's crazy in some sense. And his disciples remembered Psalm 69:9, where he says, passion for God's house will consume me. Man, what does he mean there? Well, another way to translate that is concern for God's house will be my undoing. He's so concerned for God's people and God's house and God's temple where people come to meet with God that it's going to consume him. It's going to be his undoing. And we got to understand what all of this means for us because Jesus' anger wasn't directed at the Pharisees as much as they might have deserved it, as much as we want to look in and think that. It wasn't directed at the world and the money changers, all the people trying to make money. It's not even directed at us as much as we might deserve it. Jesus' anger was directed toward the fact that people that he loves are separated from the God of the universe. He's angry that people are lost. He's angry that they don't know. He's angry that they're separated from God, and that consumed him. That passion consumed him, and it was his undoing. Because here's the gospel truth for us today. Jesus doesn't just get angry at sin. He defeated it for us. He got so angry that he went to war. He went to war against the very thing that would keep the people that he loved from the God that he loved. Man, that's beautiful. His anger led to resurrection, not revenge. Led to restoration, not retaliation, right? He could have retaliated against us, but he didn't. He lived the perfect life, never once letting anger become selfish or self-justifying for himself. And because of his love and righteous anger, he went to the cross to take our sin and death onto himself. See, we deserve death for rejecting the God of life. His retaliation would have been totally justified against us. We've taken the authority from him and we've put it in everything else except for the God that deserves it. He should have retaliated against us. That would be justice. But instead of getting justice, we got mercy because Jesus was undone so that we could live with God forever. He rose from the dead and defeated sin and death so that we could be brought close to God. Man, that's just beautiful. So how is it possible to be angry and not sin? That's the question, right? How can we do this? Well, the answer isn't in us at all, is it? It's in Jesus. John 8:58, Jesus tells the Pharisees, "Before Abraham was, I am." Man, he is the eternal, self-existent God with ultimate authority over life and death and sin, justice, and his anger flows from his identity as that God, not from his feelings. And because he is the I am, we can entrust our anger to him, all of our sin, all of our rebellion, all of the brokenness in the world that we see, knowing that he's going to make it all right with his power and his authority over everything. I told you this earlier. John placed the temple story next to the Cana miracle for a significant theological reason, right? Well, you know, I mean, if we look at the Cana miracle, there's a lot of parallels, but they're almost flipped. They're the opposite. So you go back and read it. You know, Jesus is the greatest party guy of all, right? I mean, he's adding to their celebration. He's invited in as a guest. He's very quiet and reserved. He goes in and, you know, they kind of have to goad him and ask him to help with the situation. His mom's like, hey, just be obedient and do whatever he asks. And so he adds to the celebration, doesn't he? He turns the water into wine. Their joy overflows. It's the best wine out of everything that they've had. It's a beautiful scene. Sometimes Jesus does that in our life. He adds to our life. But then in the temple situation, well, we have the exact opposite, don't we? In some sense, he comes in guns a-blazing. And he's not quiet and reserved. He's dramatic and public. And he's not invited in. Nobody wants him there. And he forces himself in and breaks through. And he overturns tables and he confronts sin. What John wants us to see here is that that's the same God that does both of those things. You know, people will look in and say, well, Jesus is just schizophrenic, isn't he? I mean, he just goes from one to the other extreme. What's the deal with this? How can this be the same God? It's the same God. Sometimes he adds to your life. Sometimes he takes away. Sometimes he fills your table to overflowing. Sometimes he turns them over in your heart. It's the very same God that does both. And when it comes to anger, the question for us is, what do you need him to do for you today? When it comes to your anger, do you need him to fill your table up and teach you what it looks like to have a healthy anger? Do you need him to flip over the tables of your heart and show you that you've been an angry person and you need to repent? Maybe it's a little bit of both. It's probably a little bit of both for all of us. As we surrender to Jesus' authority today, we need to ask that question. God, what do you want me to see in my anger? Teach me what healthy anger looks like. It's not that anger is a wrong emotion, right? This is what we're talking about. Anger is not always wrong. It stems from something that is or has been done to someone that we love that's wrong. We know it needs to be rectified, but anger can get a hold of us so quick if we're not careful. They can make us think that we're being righteously indignant when we're actually being totally selfish and self-centered. We need Jesus to control us, not our anger. That means we need to let him search our heart today. When we get angry, we need to ask him to reveal to us what that anger is coming from. We either need to let him teach us healthy anger or put it to death in our heart because it's selfish. Because anger that's selfish fights for retaliation and it leads to ruin. But healthy, God-informed anger that's good, man, it can motivate us to action. Good action. Because it leads to restoration. What does redeemed, healthy anger really look like that restores? Let me just give you three quick points on this, and then we'll start to conclude our time. These are the three points. The first one is acting against injustice. That's what healthy anger looks like. Righting the wrongs that we see in this world, not in vengeful ways, but in appropriate ways that fight for those who can't fight for themselves. Listen, are you so angry at the brokenness of the systems that we have in our American culture, the injustices that you see in the world, that you're willing to speak up and participate in the public square in direct and helpful ways that are appropriate to help those who can't help themselves? Are you so angry at that brokenness, you're willing to get in and get uncomfortable? You become a lawyer? Or you peacefully protest? Or you engage with your political leaders in a civil way, or you even get into politics? That's fine. Are you willing to engage in those ways, or are you just going to check out? I'd say you're not angry enough in the healthy way. Or are you going to do it the opposite way, where you post on your line, Donald Trump's terrible, right? Kamala Harris is terrible. The Democrats, the Republicans. Yeah, you're really doing something there, aren't you? You're really helping people. Get over it yourself when you do that. And get angry the right way. We've got to get angry in a healthy way and let God inform the anger, not our selfishness. Listen, here's the second thing. Protecting relationships rather than punishing people. That's what healthy anger looks like. You protect, you don't hurt, you don't punish. Are you so angry at your own sin that you're willing to say, I'm sorry to someone and reconcile with them in order to protect the relationship? Are you so committed to loving them that you won't hold past hurts against them, that you'll love them through their sin struggles, even through the hurt? Doesn't mean you have to trust people. We talk about this all the time. You don't have to trust. But are you willing to forgive? You don't withhold forgiveness. You don't withhold love. You lean into it. That's healthy anger. Listen, here's the third one. Making God's mission your purpose. That's healthy anger. Are you so angry at the lostness in the world like Jesus was that you're willing to do whatever it takes to get the gospel to the ends of the earth? People have never heard about Jesus. Are you angry about that? That there's some tribe somewhere in the world that has never had access? That you can walk for hundreds of miles in India and nobody will know who Jesus is because they've never heard? Are you angry enough that your coworker is trying to deal with their divorce without hope, that you're willing to share Jesus with them because he is your hope? How angry are you, and is it healthy anger? You willing to go on a short-term mission trip? You willing to give to God's mission faithfully, financially? You willing to get uncomfortable to share your faith with those around you in this world? Man, we got to get angrier, but in the right way, not in the wrong way. We've done this every week to encourage you guys. I've shared a story of somebody in our church who struggled with whatever feeling that we're talking about. And I want to do that today to give you some encouragement here. Somebody who's let Jesus come into their heart and turn the tables over on anger. So I'm going to conclude in just a moment. So Jordan, if you want to go ahead and come up and start playing for us, we'll respond together. But as you do that, let me share my dad's story. It's my dad's story of anger. I asked him to write something. He didn't want to. He told me I could talk from my own perspective. So everything that I'm sharing here is true and he's okay with. All right. So just so that you know that as we go into it, my dad used to be an angry person. And I think he got it honestly. My grandfather was an angry person. My grandfather came up to about here on me. I think he was a short, angry guy. And, you know, never abusive, never anything like that toward his family. That's the funny thing. Just angry about everything. You could tell just everything bothered him. Every little thing, all of that. My dad was the same way. My grandfather one time got so angry that he threw a Right Guard shaving can into the ground, into the wooden floor, and it stuck there on its side. Just angry person, you know? So I think my father got it honestly. But you know, he was just angry. His job made him angry. Little things at home would make him angry. He would just freak out about the smallest things. Of course, driving would be angry. I just dreaded driving with him because he would get angry about everything. Football game would make him angry. And I'm not talking about just like, you know, that guy's a jerk. I mean like visibly change the temperature of the room kind of angry. Just controlled him. And then I don't know how long it was. I don't know how many years ago it was. But I think he started to believe the gospel more and apply it to his anger. And I think he let Jesus come in and start to rearrange the tables in his heart and turn things over. Because most of you guys, I mean, if you know my dad, you're like, Mike's an angry person? Yeah, I mean, he was. Now, I laughed at him most of the time when he got angry because it was just that over the top and dramatic. But he's not like that anymore. And it's because Jesus has come in and changed everything for him in that way. Man, what a beautiful story. I know it's a small thing, but you go from being somebody that it's hard to be around to somebody who's just fun, somebody who enjoys life that you want to be around because he's not angry. That's what Jesus can do for you. I want to encourage you today that your anger doesn't have to control you. It's possible to change. It took him years, I think. Slow steps, believing the gospel over and over again, dying to self, dying to what makes you angry, and taking that to Jesus in the moment and saying, Jesus, I need you. Let me give you some very practical advice here, okay? I want to tell you to name, submit, and then get wisdom. Name whatever it seems like makes you angry in the moment. Try to recognize it. Half the battle is just recognizing what's going on in your heart, right? Letting God identify that for you. So say, hey, God, I'm angry right now, and I'm not sure why. But can you give me some insight? What is it? And then try to name that thing that's making you angry. Not just like your child throwing a temper tantrum. Why is my child throwing a temper tantrum actually making me? Oh, I know what it is. It's because it discomforts. It's making me uncomfortable. It's because I have to give up my time. I feel like I deserve rest. I feel like I deserve time to myself. At the very worst of it, I wish my child wasn't here to bother me. You see what I'm talking about? You got to name it at the bottom of what it is that makes you angry, and then you got to submit it to Jesus and say, Jesus, I need you to take this thing from me. This is what's making me angry. I see that it's a problem. I see that it's sin. I need you to take it from me, and I need you to help me put it to death. And you take it to him. You submit it to him in prayer. Maybe you even need to confess it to someone else. Maybe you need to take that and submit that in community. And then you need to ask God for wisdom on how that anger could actually bring restoration. Man, I'm so angry that my child is upset right now. Let me direct that to teach them how to mature. Let me direct that to teach them how to follow Jesus in this moment. Let me direct that anger and that passion for them instead of for myself. You need wisdom in that. You need God to come in and rearrange your heart. You need to ask God to do this for us. We need to repent if it's selfish and then ask him to turn whatever anger it is to loving action, because healthy anger fights for something. Healthy anger fights for restoration, not retaliation. We're going to respond in just a few moments. I'm going to have you come up and take your elements for communion. This is for those of us who follow Jesus to respond today. We want to know that we're putting our anger to death on the cross with him, and we do this symbolically to symbolize us putting ourselves to death, putting our feelings to death, and then raising a new life with him. Eating at his table. You might need him to overturn your table today, but you might need him to fill your table. And so as we take communion, you can do that. If you're not a believer here, we'd ask that you wouldn't take this with us. But also if you're in the room and you need to spend time praying and asking God to help you name what it is and to submit it to him and to get wisdom on that, to turn it to good action, you might need to spend time praying at our symbolic altar. This is just the front of the stage, but sometimes you need to take steps, actual physical steps to respond. You need to come up and you need to ask God to help you in your heart. So I would encourage you to come up and pray today if that's you and you need to do that. I'm going to pray and then you respond in those two ways. God, we need you today because anger is one of those things that can get a hold of us real quick. And we know that. We acknowledge that today. God, I pray that you'll help our church not to be less angry. That's really not what it's about, but to be angry in the right ways that honor you, to be angry in a way that restores, not retaliates, angry in a way that heals, doesn't harm. God, I pray that over our church today, that people be so angry about the lostness they see in this world that they can't help but share the gospel with somebody when they leave here, that you get deep down in their heart and convict them today. They haven't been angry enough in the right ways. They've been too angry in a selfish way. I know I needed that this week, God. You showed me so many things that I'm angry at that is just so selfish, so stupid. Makes zero sense, and yet I do it because I'm sinful, and I'm thankful that Jesus came into the world for me, God. I'm thankful that Jesus came into the world for us and died for us so that we could be angry in the right ways. I pray that over our church. I pray that you'll help us to be missional this week. Give us deep worship over the next few minutes, God. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks so much for listening with us today. We hope that it was an encouragement to you. But you know, we don't see this as a replacement for gathering with other believers in a local church context. So if you don't have a local church, we would encourage you to plug in with one wherever you are. And if you're in Roanoke, Virginia, we'd love to invite you to plug in with us here at Redemption Church. And you're welcome anytime to gather with us. But you can check us out online at our website, redemptionroanoke.com. You can look for other content or resources there. But thanks again for listening.